Ramtop people believed that the Og feud was a blessing. The thought of them turning their immense energy on the world in general was a terrible one. Fortunately, there was no one an Og would rather fight than another Og. It was family. Odd things, families, when you came to think of it.
Esme, you all right?
What?
You've got them cups rattling like nobody's business, and tea all over the tray.
Granny looked down blankly at the mess and rallied as best she could.
Not my damn fault if the damn cups are too small, she muttered.
The door opened.
Morning, Magrat, she added, without looking round. What are you doing here?
It was something about the way the hinges creaked. Magrat could even open a door apologetically. The younger witch sidled speechlessly into the room, face beetroot red, arms held behind her back.
We'd just popped in to sort out Desiderata's things, as our duty to a sister witch, said Granny loudly.
And not to look for her magic wand, said Nanny.
Githa Og.
Nanny looked momentarily guilty, and then hung her head.
Sorry, Esme.
Magrat brought her arms around in front of her. She said, and blushed further.
You found it, said Nanny.
No, said Magrat, not daring to look Granny in the eyes.
Desiderata gave it to me.
The silence crackled and hummed.
She gave it to you?
Said Granny Weatherwax.
Yeah.
Nanny and Granny looked at one another.
Well, said Nanny.
She does know you, doesn't she?
Demanded Granny, turning back to Magrat.
I used to come over here quite often to look at her books, Magrat confessed, and she liked to cook foreign food, and no one else round here would eat it, so I'd come up to keep her company.
Aha! Currying favour, snapped Granny.
But I never thought she'd leave me her wand, said Magrat. Really, I didn't.
There's probably some mistake, said Nanny Og kindly. She probably wanted you to give it to one of us.
That'll be it, right enough, said Granny. She knew you were good at running errands and so on, so let's have a look at it.
She held out her hand. Magrat's knuckles tightened on the wand.
She gave it me, she said in a tiny voice.
Her mind was definitely wandering towards the end, said Granny.
She gave it me.
Fairy godmothering's a terrible responsibility, said Nanny. You got to be resourceful and flexible and tactful and able to deal with complicated affairs of the art and stuff. Desiderata would have known that.
Yes, but she gave it me.
Magrat Garlic, as senior witch, I command you to give me the wand, said Granny. They cause nothing but trouble.
Hold on, hold on, said Nanny. That's going a bit far.
No, said Magrat.
Anyway, you ain't senior witch, said Nanny. Old Mother Dismas is older than you.
Shut up. Anyway, she's non-compost mental, said Granny.
You can't order me. Witches are non-hierarchical, said Magrat.
That is wanton behaviour, Magrat Garlic.
No, it's not, said Nanny Og, trying to keep the peace. Wanton behaviour is where you go round without wearing any...
She stopped. Both of the older witches watched a small piece of paper fall out of Magrat's sleeve and zigzag down to the floor. Granny darted forward and snatched it up.
Aha! She said triumphantly. Let's see what Desiderata really said.
Her lips moved as she read the note. Magrat tried to wind herself up tighter. A couple of muscles flickered on Granny's face. Then, calmly, she screwed up the note.
Just as I thought, she said. Desiderata says we are to give Magrat all the help we can, what with her being young and everything. Didn't she, Magrat?
Magrat looked up into Granny's face. You could call her out, she thought. The note was very clear. Well, the bit about the old witches was, anyway. And you could make her read it aloud. It's as plain as day. Do you want to be a third witch forever? And then the flame of rebellion, burning in a very unfamiliar hearth, died.
Yes, she muttered hopelessly. Something like that.
It says it's very important we go to some place somewhere to help someone marry a prince, said Granny.
It's genuine, said said Magrat. I looked it up in Desiderata's books, and we've got to make sure she doesn't marry a prince.
A fairy godmother stopping a girl from marrying a prince? Said Nanny. Sounds a bit contrary.
Should be an easy enough wish to grant anyway, said Granny. Millions of girls don't marry a prince.
Magrat made an effort. Genua really is a long way away, she said.
I should hope so, said Granny Weatherwax. The last thing we want is foreign parts up close.
I mean, there'll be a lot of travelling, said Magrat wretchedly, and you're not as young as you were.
There was a long, crowded silence. We start tomorrow, said Granny Weatherwax firmly.
Look, said Magrat desperately, why don't I go by myself?
"'Cause you ain't experienced at fairy godmothering, said Granny Weatherwax.
This was too much even for Magrat's generous soul. Well, nor are you, she said.
That's true, Granny conceded. But the point is... The point is we've not been experienced for a lot longer than you.
We've got a lot of experience of not having any experience, said Nanny Og happily.
That's what counts every time, said Granny.
There was only one small speckled mirror in Granny's house. When she got home, she buried it at the bottom of the garden.
There, she said. Now try spying on me.
It never seemed possible to people that Jason Og, master blacksmith and farrier, was Nanny Og's son. He didn't look as if he could possibly have been born, but as if he must have been constructed in a shipyard. To his essentially slow and gentle nature, genetics had seen fit to add muscles that should have gone to a couple of bullocks, arms like tree trunks and legs like four beer barrels stacked in twos. To his glowing forge were brought the stud stallions, the red-eyed and foam-flecked kings of the horse nation, the soup-plate-hoofed beasts that had kicked lesser men through walls. But Jason Og knew the secret of the mystic horseman's word, and he would go alone into the forge, politely shut the door, and lead the creature out again after half an hour, newly shod and strangely docile. Granny Weatherwax had once pressed him about this, and since there are no secrets from a witch, he'd shyly replied, What happens is, I gets hold of 'en, and I smacks 'em between the eyes with a rammer, before 'en knows what's happening. And then I whispers in his ear and I says, "Cross me, you bugger, and I'll have thy ghoulies on Tanville, and thou knows I can." Behind his huge brooding shape clustered the rest of Nanny Og's endless family, and a lot of other townsfolk who, seeing some interesting activity involving witches, couldn't resist the opportunity for what was known in the Ramtops as a good ogle.
"'Wim off, then, our Jason,' said Nanny Og. "'They do say the streets in foreign parts are paved with gold. "'I could probably make me fortune, eh?'
Jason's hairy brow creased in intense thought.
"'Us could do with a new anvil down forge,' he volunteered. "'If I come back rich, you won't never have to go down the forge ever again,' said Nanny.
Jason frowned.
"'But I likes the forge,' he said slowly.
Nanny looked momentarily taken aback.
"'Well then you shall have an anvil made of solid silver.' "'Won't be no good, ma. It'd be too soft,' said Jason. "'If I brings you back an anvil made of solid silver, you shall have an anvil made of solid silver, my lad, whether you likes it or not.'
Jason hung his huge head.
"'Yes, Mum,' he said. "'You see to it that someone comes in to keep the house aired every day, regular,' said Nanny. "'I want to file it in that grate every morning.'
"'Yes, Mum.'
"'And everyone's to go in through the back door, yeah? "'I've put a curse on the front porch. "'Where's those girls got to with me luggage?'
"'She scurried off, a small grey bantam scolding a flock of hens. "'Magrat listened to all this with interest.' Her own preparations had consisted of a large sack, containing several changes of clothes to accommodate whatever weather foreign parts might suffer from, and a rather smaller one containing a number of useful-looking books from Desiderata Hollow's cottage. Desiderata had been a great note-taker and had filled dozens of little books with neat writing and chapter headings like "With Wand and Broomstick, Across the Great Neff Desert." What she had never bothered to do, it seemed, was write down any instructions for the wand. As far as Magrat knew, you waved it and wished. Along the track to her cottage, several unanticipated pumpkins bore witness to this as an unreliable strategy. One of them still thought it was a stoat. Now Magrat was left alone with Jason, who shuffled his feet. He touched his forelock. He'd been brought up to be respectful to women, and Magrat fell broadly into this category.
"You will look after our mum, won't you, Mistress Garlick?" he said, a hint of worry in his voice. "She'm acting awful strange."
Magrat patted him gently on the shoulder. "This sort of thing happens all the time," she said. "You know, after a woman's raised a family and so on, she wants to start living her own life."
"Whose life's she been living, then?"
Magrat gave him a puzzled look. She hadn't questioned the wisdom of the thought when it had first arrived in her head.
"You see, what it is," she said, making an explanation up as she went along, "there comes a time in a woman's life when she wants to find herself."
"Why didn't she start looking here?" said Jason plaintively. "I mean, I ain't wanting to talk out of turn, Miss Garlick, but we was looking to you to persuade her and Mistress Weatherwax not to go."
"I tried," said Magrat. "I really did. I said, 'You don't want to go,' I said. 'Anno Domini,' I said. 'Not as young as you used to be,' I said. 'Silly to go hundreds of miles just for something like this, especially at your age.'"
Jason put his head on one side. Jason Ogg wouldn't end up in the finals of the All Discworld Uptake Speed Trials, but he knew his own mother.
"You said all that to our mum," he said.
"Look, don't worry," said Magrat. "I'm sure no harm could—"
There was a crash somewhere over their heads. A few autumn leaves spiralled gently towards the ground.
"Bloody tree! Who put that bloody tree there?"
came a voice from on high.
That'll be Granny," said Magrat.
It was one of the weak spots of Granny Weatherwax's otherwise well-developed character that she'd never bothered to get the hang of steering things. It was alien to her nature. She took the view that it was her job to move and the rest of the world to arrange itself so that she arrived at her destination. This meant that she occasionally had to climb down trees she'd never climbed up. This she did now, dropping the last few feet and daring anyone to comment.
"Well, now we're all here," said Magrat brightly.
They didn't work. Granny Weatherwax's eyes focused immediately somewhere around Magrat's knees.
"And what do you think you're wearing?"
she said. I thought it gets cold up there, what with the wind and everything," Magrat began.
She had been dreading this, and hating herself for being so weak. After all, they were practical. The idea had come to her one night. Apart from anything else, it was almost impossible to do Mr. Lobsang Dibbler's cosmic harmony death kicks when your legs kept getting tangled in a skirt.
"Trousers?"
"They're not exactly the same as ordinary."
"And there's many a looking," said Granny. "I think it's shameful."
"What is?" said Nanny Ogg, coming up behind her.
"Magrat Garlick standing there bifurcated," said Granny, sticking her nose in the air.
"Just so long as she got the young man's name and address," said Nanny Ogg amiably.
"Nanny," said Magrat.
"I think they look quite comfy," Nanny went on. "Bit baggy, though."
"I don't hold with it," said Granny. "Everyone can see her legs."
"No, they can't," said Granny. "The reason being the material is in the way."
"Yes, but they can see where her legs are," said Granny Weatherwax.
"That's silly. That's like saying everyone's naked under their clothes," said Magrat.
"Magrat Garlick, may you be forgiven," said Granny Weatherwax.
"Well, it's true."
"I'm not," said Granny flatly. "I've got three vests on."
She looked Nanny up and down. Githa Ogg, too, had made sartorial preparations for foreign parts. Granny Weatherwax could find little to disapprove of, although she made an effort.
"And will you look at your hat?" she mumbled.
Nanny, who had known Esme Weatherwax for 70 years, merely grinned.
"All the go, ain't it?" she said.
"Made by Mr. Vernissage, over in Slice. It's got willow reinforcing all the way up to the point, and 18 pockets inside. Can stop a blow with a hammer, this hat. And how about these?"
Nanny raised the hem of her skirt. She was wearing new boots. As boots, Granny Weatherwax could find nothing to complain of in them. They were of proper witch construction, which is to say that a loaded cart could have run over them without causing a dent in the dense leather. As boots,
The only thing wrong with them was the colour.
"Red?" said Granny. "That's no colour for a witch's boots."
"I likes them," said Nanny. Granny sniffed.
"You can please yourself, I'm sure," she said. "I'm sure in foreign parts they goes in for all sorts of outlandish things. But you know what they say about women who wear red boots?"
"Just so long as they also say they've got dry feet," said Nanny cheerfully. She put her door key in Jason's hand. "I'll write your letters if you promise to find someone to read them to you," she said.
"Yes, Mum."
Mum, what about the cat, Mum?" said Jason.
"Oh, Grebo's coming with us," said Nanny Ogg.
"What? But he's a cat," snapped Granny Weatherwax. "You can't take cats with you. I'm not going travelling with no cat. Bad enough travelling with trousers and provocative boots."
"He'll miss his mummy if he's left behind, won't he?" crooned Nanny Ogg, picking up Grebo.
He hung limply like a bag of water gripped around the middle. To Nanny Ogg, Grebo was still the cute little kitten that chased balls of wool around the floor. To the rest of the world, he was an enormous tomcat, a parcel of incredibly indestructible life forces, in a skin that looked less like a fur than a piece of bread that had been left in a damp place for a fortnight. Strangers often took pity on him because his ears were non-existent, and his face looked as though a bear had camped on it. They could not know that this was because Grebo, as a matter of feline pride, would attempt to fight or rape absolutely anything, up to and including a four-horse logging wagon. Ferocious dogs would whine and hide under the stairs when Grebo sauntered down the street. Foxes kept away from the village. Wolves made a detour.
"He's an old softy, really," said Nanny.
Grebo turned upon Granny Weatherwax a yellow-eyed stare of self-satisfied malevolence, such as cats always reserve for people who don't like them, and purred. Grebo was possibly the only cat who could snigger in purr.
"Anyway," said Nanny, "witches are supposed to like cats."
"Not cats like him, they're not."
"You're just not a cat person, Esme," said Nanny, cuddling Grebo tightly.
Jason Ogg pulled Magrat aside.
"Our Sean read to me in the almanac where there's all these fearsome wild beasts in foreign parts," he whispered. "Huge, hairy things that leap out on travellers, it said. I'd hate to think what'd happen if they leapt out on Mum and Granny."
Magrat looked up into his big red face.
"You will see no harm comes to them, won't you?" said Jason. "Don't you worry," she said, hoping that he needn't. "I'll do my best."
Jason nodded.
"Only it said in the almanac that some of them were nearly extinct anyway," he said.
The sun was well up when the three witches spiralled into the sky. They'd been delayed for a while because of the intractability of Granny Weatherwax's broomstick, the starting of which always required a great deal of galloping up and down. It never seemed to get the message until it was being shoved through the air at a frantic running speed. Dwarf engineers everywhere had confessed themselves totally mystified by it. They had replaced the stick and the bristles dozens of times. When it rose, eventually, it was to a chorus of cheers. The tiny kingdom of Lancre occupied little more than a wide ledge cut into the side of the Ramtop Mountains. Behind it, knife-edge peaks and dark, winding valleys climbed into the massive backbone of the central ranges. In front, the land dropped abruptly to the Stowe Plains, a blue haze of woodlands, a broader expanse of ocean, and somewhere in the middle of it all, a brown smudge known as Ankh-Morpork. A skylark sang, or at least started to sing. The rising point of Granny Weatherwax's hat right underneath it completely put it off the rhythm.
"I ain't going any higher," she said.
"If we go high enough, we might be able to see where we're going," said Magrat.
"You said you looked at Desiderata's maps," said Granny.
It looks different from up here, though," said Magrat. More sticking up. "But I think we go that way."
"You sure?"
Which was the wrong question to ask a witch, especially if the person doing the asking was Granny Weatherwax.
"Positive," said Magrat.
Nanny Ogg looked up at the high peaks.
"There's a lot of big mountains that way," she said.
They rose tier on tier, speckled with snow, trailing endless pennants of ice crystals high overhead. No one skied in the high ramtops, at least for more than a few feet and a disappearing scream. No one ran up them wearing dirndls and singing. They were not nice mountains. They were the kind of mountains where winters went for their summer holidays.
"There's passes and things through them," said Magrat uncertainly.
"Bound to be," said Nanny.
You can use two mirrors like this, if you know the way of it. You set them so that they reflect each other. For if images can steal a bit of you, then images of images can amplify you, feeding you back on yourself, giving you power. And your image extends forever, in reflections of reflections of reflections, and every image is the same, all the way around the curve of light. Except that it isn't. Mirrors contain infinity. Infinity contains more things than you think. Everything, for a start, including hunger. Because there's 1,000,000,000,000 images, and only one soul to go around. Mirrors give plenty, but they take away lots. Mountains unfolded to reveal more mountains. Clouds gathered, heavy and grey.
"I'm sure we're going the right way," said Magrat.
Freezing rock stretched away. The witches flew along a maze of twisty little canyons all alike.
"Yeah,"
said Granny.
"Well, you won't let me fly high enough," said Magrat. "He's going to snow like blazes in a minute," said Nanny Og.
It was early evening. Light was draining out of the high valleys like custard.
"I thought there'd be villages and things," said Magrat, "where we could buy interesting native produce and seek shelter in rude huts."
"You wouldn't even get trolls up here," said Granny.
The three broomsticks glided down into a bare valley, a mere notch in the mountainside.
"And it's bloody cold," said Nanny Og.
She grinned.
"Why are they called rude huts, anyway?"
Granny Weatherwax climbed off her broomstick and looked at the rocks around her. She picked up a stone and sniffed it. She wandered over to a heap of scree that looked like any other heap of scree to Magrat and prodded it.
"Hmm,"
she said. A few snow crystals landed on her hat.
"Well, well," she said.
"What are you doing, Granny?" said Magrat.
"Cogitating."
Granny walked to the valley's steep side and strolled along it, peering up at the rock. Nanny Og joined her.
"Up here," said Nanny.
"I reckon."
"A bit high for them, ain't it?"
"Little devils get everywhere. Had one come up in my kitchen once," said Granny. "Following a seam," he said.
"They're boogers for that," said Nanny. "Would you mind telling me," said Magrat, "what you're doing? What's so interesting about heaps of stones?"
The snow was falling faster now.
"They ain't stones, they're spoil," said Granny.
She reached a flat wall of ice-covered rock, no different in Magrat's eyes from the rock available in a range of easy-to-die-on sizes everywhere in the mountains, and paused, as if listening. Then she stood back, hit the rock sharply with her broomstick, and spake thusly.
"Open up, you little sods!"
Nanny Og kicked the rock. It made a hollow boom.
"There's people catching their death of cold out here," she added.
Nothing happened for a while. Then a section of rock swung in a few inches. Magrat saw the glint of a suspicious eye.
"Yes?"
"Dwarfs," said Magrat.
Granny Weatherwax leaned down until her nose was level with the eye.
"My name," she said, "is Granny Weatherwax."
She straightened up again, her face glowing with self-satisfaction.
"Who's that, then?"
said a voice from somewhere below the eye. Granny's expression froze. Nanny Og nudged her partner.
"We must be more than 50 miles away from home," she said. "They might not have heard of you in these parts."
Granny leaned down again. Accumulated snowflakes cascaded off her hat.
"I ain't blaming you," she said, "but I know you'll have a king in there. So just you go and tell him that Granny Weatherwax is here, will you?"
"He's very busy," said the voice. "We've just had a bit of trouble."
"Then I'm sure he don't want any more," said Granny.
The invisible speaker appeared to give this some consideration.
"We put writing on the door," it said sulkily, "in invisible runes. It's really expensive getting proper invisible runes done."
"I don't go around reading doors," said Granny.
The speaker hesitated.
"Weatherwax, did you say?"
"Yes, with a W, as in witch."
The door slammed. When it was shut, there was a barely visible crack in the rock. The snow was falling fast now. Granny Weatherwax jiggled up and down a bit to keep warm.
"That's foreigners for you," she said to the frozen world in general.
"I don't think you can call dwarfs foreigners," said Nanny Og.
"Don't see why not," said Granny. "A dwarf who lives a long way off has got to be foreign. That's what foreign means."
"Yeah? Oh, funny to think of it like that," said Nanny.
They watched the door, their breath forming three little clouds in the darkening air. Magrat peered at the stone door.
"I don't see any invisible runes," she said.
"Course not," said Nanny. "That's 'cause they're invisible."
"Yeah," said Granny Weatherwax. "Don't be daft."
The door swung open again.
"I spoke to the king," said the voice.
"And what did he say?" said Granny expectantly.
"He said, 'Oh no, not on top of everything else.'"
Granny beamed.
"I knew he would have heard of me," she said.
In the same way that there are 1,000 kings of the gypsies, so there are 1,000 kings of the dwarfs. The term means something like senior engineer. There aren't any queens of the dwarfs. Dwarfs are very reticent about revealing their sex, which most of them don't consider to be very important compared to things like metallurgy and hydraulics. This king was standing in the middle of a crowd of shouting miners. Many of the more traditional dwarf tribes have no female pronouns like she or her. It follows that the courtship of dwarfs is an incredibly tactful affair. He looked up at the witches with the expression of a drowning man looking at a drink of water.
"Are you really any good?" he said.
Nanny Og and Granny Weatherwax looked at one another.
"I think he's talking to you, Magrat," said Granny.
"Only we've had a big fall in Gallery 9, said the king. "It looks bad. A very promising vein of gold-bearing quartz is irretrievably trapped."
One of the dwarfs beside him muttered something.
"Oh, yeah, and some of the lads," said the king vaguely.
"And then you turn up. So the way I look at it, it's probably fate."
Granny Weatherwax shook the snow off her hat and looked around. She was impressed, despite herself. You didn't often see proper dwarf halls these days. Most dwarves were off earning big money in the cities down in the lowlands, where it was much easier to be a dwarf. For one thing, you didn't have to spend most of your time underground hitting your thumb with a hammer and worrying about fluctuations in the international metal markets. Lack of respect for tradition. That was the trouble these days. And take trolls. There were more trolls in Ankh-Morpork now than in the whole mountain range. Granny Weatherwax had nothing against trolls, but she felt instinctively that if more trolls stopped wearing suits and walking upright and went back to living under bridges and jumping out and eating people as nature intended, then the world would be a happier place.
"You'd better show us where the problem is," she said. "Lots of rocks fallen down, have they?"
"Pardon?" said the king.
It's often said that Eskimos have 50 words for snow. Well, not often. Not on a daily basis, anyway. At least not everywhere. But probably in some cold countries people say, "Hey, those Eskimos, what a people! 50 words for snow, can you believe that? Amazing!" Quite a lot. This is not true. It's also said that dwarfs have 200 words for rock. They don't. They have no words for rock, in the same way that fish have no words for water. They do have words for igneous rock, sedimentary rock, metamorphic rock, rock underfoot, rock dropping on your helmet from above, and rock which looked interesting and which they could have sworn they left here yesterday. But what they don't have is a word meaning rock. Show a dwarf a rock and he sees, for example, an inferior piece of crystalline sulphide of biorites. Or, in this case, about 200 tons of low-grade shale. When the witches arrived at the disaster site, dozens of dwarfs were working feverishly to prop the cracked roof and cart away the debris. Some of them were in tears.
"It's terrible. Terrible," muttered one of them. A terrible thing."
Magrat lent him her handkerchief. He blew his nose noisily.
"Could mean a big slippage on the fault line and then we've lost the whole seam," he said, shaking his head.
Another dwarf patted him on the back.
"Look on the bright side," he said. "We can always drive a horizontal shaft off Gallery 15. We're bound to pick it up again, don't you worry.